Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you might be. My name is Sharice Alexander, your host of Your Collective. On today's episode, I'll be sitting down with my longtime friend and author of the book, Revenge is for God. Today, Les and I will be chatting about his experience as a young father, some of the challenges that he faced, and how he navigated those experiences. So without any further delay, let's dive in. Thank you so much, Les, for joining me today here on Your Collective. It is such an honor and a pleasure to have you join me today. You are one of those people that I find to be supremely fascinating with an interesting story. I've known you for, like 30 years. Wow. I've known you. You're like one of the I don't want to say you're one of the oldest people I know, but you're one of the people I've known the longest in my life. Let's just say it like that. And so it's really awesome to have you here today. We are going to get to it because I've got lots of questions and I think you have a lot that you want to share and that you want to say today. So welcome. Why don't we start with you telling me a little bit about yourself and to the listeners that are joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me on this podcast. This is like the first time I've done it, so you know, please be
cherry popping.
He didn't want it to be sexual.
I didn't. Okay, I guess I did. Sorry.
Well, my name is Les Ray. Raz, you call me Raz Ray for short. I work as entrepreneur, running businesses. I am currently an author of a book called Revenge is for God. And I'm writing my own comic book series. And I have known this Miss here, Sharice, for a good number of years. And I'm just happy to be here today to discuss whatever pops up.
Yeah, we're gonna discuss a few things. So this particular interview is actually part of my men's series.
This is us versus them type of thing, huh?
No, not at all. In fact, it's just the opposite. Yeah, it's actually exactly the opposite. And I think what actually spawned this in my mind is I was having a conversation with Anthony one day. And so I have done an episode with Anthony as well, where we get into this. And anyways, we were standing in the kitchen one day and he was trying to share with me his perspective as a young man and men's rights. And I looked at him, I said, ain't no woman want to hear shit about men's rights. Like, boy, please. That was like my attitude. Yeah. And he did that. That face you just made is what he did.
Yeah.
But what I was so he looked at me and he was like, Mom, you have like three sons. Like, how could this not be important to you? And of course, I was able to take a step back and say, okay, you know what? You're right. You're my sons and I love you and you are important to me. And so the things that are important to you are important to me. Anyways, it took us down this path of, looking or starting to talk about men's rights. And he pointed me in the direction of these YouTubers, Abba and Preach. If you've never seen them, go watch them. And I think their content's evolved a little bit. I still find them extremely entertaining. But sometimes when I'm in conversations with people, when I say, how did this come up? It's actually a lead up to Father's Day or right around Father's Day. And, you know, we always hear so much about Mother's Day. Mother's Day always gets so much Hallmark ad space.
The Mother's Day get romantic dinners and the candies and the I love you, Mom, and stay at home while we get a tie, if we get a tie
or
a card, or even a happy Father's Day. Take it as it is. We've been doing it for years. I don't really wish him. I call my dad, I wish him a happy Father's Day. He doesn't say nothing back. It's nothing.
Right. So I was just curious. And so it got me thinking about, you know, wanting to hear it from a man's perspective, because we as women often talk about the challenges around parenting and the challenges around motherhood. And I think in large degree, that challenge is because of how the roles have shifted and changed over the decades between men and women, mothers and fathers, and what that actually looks like in a household today. So that's what actually inspired this. And I'm sure we will go off in many directions with this content, but what inspired this particular men's series was I really wanted to hear from the men that I knew who were fathers and understand what their challenges are. So I will turn it over to you. Tell us about your experience as being a young father.
Great. I loved being a young father. It was amazing. I mean, once again, I think we started this, I'm not sure if we got it on, but we were talking about problems in life and the problem people have. Like most men, I was about 26 years old, coming out of a place of, I desperately wanted to have some type of, I wanted to be teetered to some type of a new life, a new experience. I just came out of a shithole and I just came out of a hellhole and I just wanted to have something where it was stable and it was loving and it would calm down from my regular life. So, you know, I got with this girlfriend and, you know, everything was going good and she got pregnant and la-di-da-di-da. Life started, 26. I still think it's early to have children, wasn't married or anything like that, but it is what it is, right? You solve these problems as they come, you know? So, we decided to have the baby. Baby comes, and from the get-go, it was challenging, but it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. He's a great kid. He's, great family. He grew up very much like me, very understanding. He passed a lot of tests I gave him. It was fun being a father. He just got this little mini me beside you, which you can mold and shape and grow into like whatever you want. It's like your second chance. And everything that you weren't given or taken away from, you can install that knowledge and wisdom and history onto this young, impressionable kid. And I think I did that very good. And there's three parts, right? It starts off with you got to give your kid the right genetics. You got to make sure everything's good to give that child that start. And then the second part would be like family structure. Like you got to put that kid into like the great family structure. And that was best thing about me is that I had a great community. You know, my mom and everybody else around me helped. Sister and everybody else helped me raise this kid, which I needed because I was still a little bit wild. I like to go out and stuff on the weekend, and just drop my kid off. And my mom would be there to help me out. And, thank you, moms. And thank you, grandmas. And, that's a problem, I think, with a lot of young kids these days. They don't have grandmas and grandparents anymore to help. But anyway, the third thing you'd also need is, the outside world. And that would infect the kid's life how it's treated, how the outside world treats them, which you have nothing to do about that. But, if you got all those three things and something happens on the outside world, they can always come back. If they got good genetics, they can always come back. If they got good family structure, they can always come back. So that's my take on it. And I love being a father. It was great. I'd do it again.
Yeah. I'm curious. You talked a lot about what you feel like you taught your son, the lessons and the values and all those other kinds of things. What would you say you learned from your experience? So what did he teach you?
What he taught me. He gave me hope. He taught me different ways of looking at things. One of the things, one of the funniest stories I have with him is that, I would always tell him stories of how to stand up for yourself. And I don't want you to be a follower. Your dad was never a follower. I don't want you to be one of these people that go around following everybody, what everybody says. I want you to be able to think for yourself. So one day I tested him. He was wearing his T-shirt that, I didn't think he should be wearing. It wasn't anything offensive, but he didn't go to that school. So why is he wearing that T-shirt? And I came in with my after work bullying self and I said, hey, listen, it's a nice T-shirt. I think you should take it off since you didn't go to that school. And he shrugged me off like I was nothing. Like, you didn't, and I'm like, listen, I'm talking to you. And he knew what was going on.
trying to lay down the law.
I want to see if he's going to pass this test. So I grabbed his arm and said, you better take that t-shirt off now. And I gave him my face, like, I mean business. And he looks at me, he's like, why don't you take it off me then? Whoa.
I'm sorry, pardon?
Yeah, right? So then what? So that was, that challenge. And then I tried to attempt to take it off and guys flipped me around, put me in a headlock. I didn't see it coming at all. So he got me by surprise. And here I am in this headlock and tapped out. And, it's a funny story. And I tell my friends and they laugh at me all the time. Like, how did you get put in the headlock by your kid? But I'm like, you guys are missing the point. The point is that he stood up for himself. He didn't let me take that t-shirt. And he fought back. And he put me in the headlock close to his own dad.
You know what? There's a lot of people that would not see that story that way.
No. And you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people. But there's a lot of kids that if their dad stood up to them, they would back down. Mm-hmm. They would back down. And that's the problem, I think, with society. A lot of people would back. A lot of people do anything to avoid the conflict, to avoid the fight. But this guy said, no, I'm not. I don't care who you are. I'm putting you in this headlock. Thank you, son, for teaching me and showing me, in fact, that you're ready for this world.
Well, I don't know if they're ever really ready. And ready or not, time just keeps on ticking. So, as parents, I think we just got to hope that we instilled them with strong enough core values that they will be okay as the problems, as you talked about, start to come up, because they will not be able to avoid them. So what are maybe some of the, and I don't love this word, so I'm going to offer an alternative word to this. So what are some of the challenges that you feel like you did face as a father, or opportunities throughout your experience?
Well, the challenges, I came, my upbringing, I came from a family where dad provided everything. So, and mom stayed at home and took care of the kids. Now, that is not the upbringing I was able to provide for my son. So that was a challenge on its own. He stayed at my house. He stayed at his mom's house. I wasn't there all the time, and not to say that I needed to be, but I was completely there when it mattered, when it counted. And I saw him lots, don't get me wrong, but not being able to like have that choice of saying, hey, stay home and I got this kid or whatever, economically, it was obviously as a challenge. The family structure was a challenge. Stuff like that, but we made it work. We totally made it work. We all came together, big mom included, all came together to make it work, to give the best opportunity and best positive experience we can. And the opportunities with that is that it really does take a village to raise your child. It really does. If you're sitting out here being, I'm single and I can do this all by my own, it's just like, whew. Wow.
I mean, you can, but I think the question is it ideal? And I mean, you talked about family structure, your mom and your dad and your sister and, Brandon's mom, and like, don't even forget like the extended family and the friends and like, right. That's a village. Actually a village, right? Because dollars to donuts, if your kid was out in the streets doing something that he shouldn't be doing, there'd be somebody who would see him and they would just pick up the phone and call and say, hey, I saw your kid. And how many times is that? And I'm not saying that necessarily happened in your household, but it happens in households everywhere, every day where somebody sees that somebody's kid out on the street doing something and they call home to say, I saw your child doing something. So it absolutely does take a village.
And you know what, Tracy, is not even that they call just for the bad stuff. You know how many calls I got? Saw your kid at the gym playing basketball today. He was amazing. Just that warm heart. Well, thank you. Okay, good. I called my kid up and like, yo, you playing basketball today? Don't let me come down there. But I mean, but I mean, yeah, you know, like it really does take a village, you know, to help. So, you know, that's definitely a bonus and a plus. So,
how old is Brandon now?
I got a 20-year-old son, you know, and yeah, here's the thing. Too, right? Like they get when they're young, you know, you got this little mini me, like I mentioned before, and they follow you around, and you got this partner and it's cool and it's great. And then they get to the 16-year-old age or whatever where they want their own life.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you're the one staying at home without your kid, you know. They grow up and it's beautiful. I mean, I'm sad because that connection is lost, but I'm so grateful that, you know, he's becoming his own person, which is everything that I'm here to teach him. I love him and he's my kid and everything like that. But the real reason, like, we're parents, you know, I'm not trying to be his best friend. I'm not trying to be his confidant. I'm not trying to be his homie in crime. I'm not trying to be his blanket for his emotions. I'm trying to make him the best person he can be in this world that's hard and it's going to be like, it's going to throw you challenges. So I need to make him strong. Because I believe in that.
So we're going to pivot. Pardon me. We're going to pivot away from that for a little bit. You mentioned that you released a book a couple years ago called Revenge is for God. Tell us a little bit about that. What is the story? Why did you write it? Actually, you don't have to tell us the whole story, but give us a summary. And why did you write it?
Revenge is for God is a book you can find on Amazon. It's a story about my past. A couple of years, I went through some troubled aspects of my life, and you know, it comes to what we were saying before. Those three things that happened. You know, I was, you know, raised with pretty good genetics. I'm short, but I'm happy. You know, I'm a pretty strong guy, and had a great family structure. You know, that was there. And then the third one was like the outside, the stuff that you can't really control was extremely traumatic and hard. Like it was, I was dealing with things that no normal, maybe normal in a sense where, you know, we're not talking about the hood or anything like that, but no normal kids should go through. And, you know, I was through those events. I was shot when I was about 18 years old. I was gunned down in a mall parking lot. And it was one of the first in the city, Edmonton, Alberta. So it kind of like raised, it kind of brought awareness and it raised a lot of what's going on with our youth and our kids. And it was like right at the beginning of all the gun violence that was happening in all schools like that. So it was a very new and scary time where, you know, children can just hurt kids for whatever they were going through. And nobody knew what really was going through. Like, I couldn't to this day tell you why I got shot, you know, five times. I still couldn't tell you the reason what would cause someone to do something like that, you know. But it happened. You know, I healed. And because of that anger now, that whatever that trauma was exploited on me, I, you know, in the book, it shows, you know, me, whatever, going back and taking that revenge, wanting to take that revenge, wanting to regain my honor and regain my ego. You know, it separated me from everything that I thought I loved and thought I was going to be. So now I go back to, you know, doing this horrendous thing by shooting somebody else and dealing with the consequences of that. And I think this book especially explores those emotions of pain, sadness, anger, redemption, loss. And I think it beautifully wraps it up. I think it's a great book for young kids to read and parents to read as well. So, you know, they can figure out what's going on. I think it's a beautiful book. And I suggest you pick it up.
I'm curious, do you think, and you're right, it was so, and I understand why you hesitated there for a moment, because from our neighbors to the south, this is every day in the hood. Like this is life, yeah. Right? This is not, your story is not special in the States.
young black kid gets shot down. I know. It's
right, like, oh, whoopee, right? But for us, it was a big deal. For us, it was very traumatic for not ever being exposed to that kind of, that level of violence over, as you so rightly put, you couldn't even say now why it happened. I don't even know that you could have even said within the first month after what happened. But my question is do you think it's even, do you think that same violence is still a concern or relevant in, I know it is in the States and it's a little different there, but is it still relevant in your community being Edmonton, Alberta?
Well, although I believe the community has grown and maybe even shifted away from like violence like that with these youths, which is very good, because I think with more awareness, more knowledge, we're growing from that. So I do see the change and the shift, but the emotions, these raw emotions, I think there's going to be, if you don't know how to deal with them properly, there's going to be other outlets. And I do believe like in our city and in our communities, there's different outlets now. Like when we were young, we didn't have certain community centers and basketball places, and we didn't have a lot of things for kids to do. So, you know, and nowadays they got the phones and everything like that, the tablets, so the games, and everyone's just so connected. And I'm not saying that's necessarily better, but what I am saying is like back in our days, we had us and we all met at one spot, and we didn't like you, you were going to know about it. And these feelings weren't exchanged through memes and text messages and little, you know, they would just punch you in the face. And that's what it was.
It was violence. You behind
school. It was violence. It was raw, thick, real emotion. You know, I can't deal with bullies in the 90s anymore. It's like they send you memes and it's just like, oh my gosh.
Right, though. I mean, you talk about emotions being very, very different. And you're right. I mean, we grew up in a time where it felt like there was some kind of physical mix-up all the time. And I think that your shooting was just the climax to 2-3 years of like just this mounting desire for there to be like this physical output. And there doesn't have to be. So how do you think the youth, yes, you're talking about having these outlets, but I think another part of that is being able to understand and actually work through emotions and not waiting until you're an adult to try and figure out that, oh, there's something wrong with the way that I'm working through my emotions. Do you with your son? Do you see him like maybe asking himself better questions or having better conversations or being more productive in how we work through these unsettling emotions?
Beautiful question. And that's the whole thing about, you know, I love being a father because it was just like, you know, coming back to my kid and instilling new things that I don't know if most parents want to say, but I was, you know, I wrote a book about it, so I'm willing to say this because I want to save these kids' lives. That's what I'm trying to do. But that's how it starts off. It starts off where it's like, you know, one group of guys writes something, graffiti something on a wall that says, you know, F you to the other guys. The other guys see it and they graffiti something back. And the other guys come, and then one guy gets punched out, and then the other group goes back, punches out another guy. Then they start stabbing each other. Then it just, the violence escalates. Someone gets shot. Then we go back and shoot two more, and then they come back and shoot three more. And you know what I mean? And it just escalates and escalates. And I was trying to tell these kids, well, let's de-escalate the situation from the first place. You know, let's stop right there. And there's ways and methods of de-escalating situations. You know, if you look at like some of the best rappers these days and some of the best guys who've gone through a hard struggle and made it to where they have, one of the best tricks they've used was de-escalating situations. Like I remember reading this book about I think it was Jay-Z and he had a beef with Prodigy from Mobb Deep, and you know, there was a situation where they were both in New York. You know what I mean? And there was a situation where Jay-Z was coming to the spot, and then that, you know, Prodigy had it set up to like do him in or whatever. And you know, when they finally meet, Jay-Z kind of meets up with Prodigy, and it's just kind of, hey, listen, you know, like we're here, we're rappers, we're both struggling. I say some stuff, you say some stuff, we're both in the same game. It just keeps everybody from buying records. We don't need to really beef. And it was kind of like, and then, you know, you heard that. It was just kind of like, you know what? You're right. Like, we don't really need to really beef. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's just live our lives. And it was just, that was just a great way of de-escalating a situation. You know, now, if you're going to keep poking the bear, that bear is going to attack. why poke a bear? You know? It's pretty simple, but there's a lot of people who won't just get that. So,
well, I think that, you know, one of the things that I've tried to really, I think, embody in communications that I have with people, you know, my siblings, my kids, my staff, like my part, anybody for that matter, when there's conflict, right? Because I think part of the challenge, what the biggest part of any of these things are, is like your feelings get hurt or you feel disrespect. Yes. Like if we take everything away and make it really, really simple, it's your feelings get hurt. And your feelings get hurt because there's a story that we're telling ourselves, right? In this case that you're using, it's like, you know, somebody disrespected me and I can't let that go unanswered because then other people are going to disrespect me, right? And I think that the first key in any human interaction when there's conflict is to really try and shift our perspective into one of understanding, right? So seek first to understand. And so like in that great example that you used about Jay-Z and Prodigy from Mobb Deep, it's like, he can see very clearly what the challenge is, right? Like we're both out here, we're both hustling, we're both slaying, we're both trying to like, you know, do what we're trying to do. And we can't let our image be tarnished, but like there's more than enough pie for both of us. So why don't I just highlight the fact that there's more than enough pie? And thankfully you're dealing with somebody who also didn't want to die over stupid shit. So I think if we approach these challenges or these uncomfortable interactions with people, understanding that when they inflict, and I'm saying this in quotation marks, inflict pain on us, it is really, really coming from a place of their own unhealed pain or conflict, right?
100%. Like, and that's the thing, like, you know, we're all in our ego. Right. You insult me and it hurts my ego and I gotta say something back. But you know, if we really just separate ourselves from that ego and just like, is that person really insulting me? Or are they coming from a place of pain and suffering themselves? Are they really, like, really?
That's a really great question.
And I get it. Like, and I like the way you put it.
Yeah.
You know, are they really, you know, that's what these bullies really are.
Yeah,
you know, they just maybe they had parents, whatever. They come home and they take it on the little guy. And if you know what that bully is going through, it's easier to deal with him. But we got to be careful with that too, because there's a difference between insulting, and then it gets to a point where you let that insult go too far. You get to a point where you could be in trouble, where now you're getting really bullied, and now they're thinking it's fun to hurt and punch and kick you. So there's got to be a level of shielding from excessive bullying and excessive talking smack, right? Because you don't want to get it too far where it becomes a traumatized thing.
It's really, for sure. And it's really easy for me to say that because my experience is not one where, you know, I have to be bullied by anyone. And the reality is like, I'm not making a case for allowing abuse to happen, either physical or verbal or emotional or any of those things. But, you know, you and I started a conversation, at the very beginning of this, and we were talking about, well, we started talking about this book that I was reading, which is called The Buddha in Your Mirror. And interestingly enough, I love how these things happen in my life. I call this a synchronicity. So I went to the yoga studio around here and I'm waiting for my yoga class. I'm sitting in the little cafe area and this lady thinks that I'm her friend. And I'm like, oh, I'm not your friend, but we can be friends. And she says, okay. I know. I felt like I was five. But what was really interesting is that I sit down and we strike up a conversation, and I've never had this happen to me before, but this lady says to me, she's like, I'm a Buddhist. And I was like, in my world, wow. It was like ding, 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 lights started going off and bells and whistles, like talk to this lady, right? So I'm like, I was like, oh, I'm super fascinated. I'm like, I would love to learn more about Buddhism. And what made that interesting is I've never, ever, ever sat down with somebody and literally in the first five sentences of a conversation, they tell me what their spirituality or faith beliefs are. That's why I took it as a sign, because I'm just like, I didn't even ask, but this lady's just right out identifying herself as a Buddhist. Anyways, so we lead down this path. She gives me this book, and this book is really quite fascinating. And a lot of the things that this book talks about, or the theory around Buddhism, is a lot of the ideas I've already kind of bought into. But one of the things, and this is why we were talking about manifesting, because one of the things that this book is talking about is that it's part of the power of being Buddhist is that you start to understand and recognize that every single experience that you have in your life, you are 100% responsible for. 100% responsible for. That is a tough one for people to swallow, because it means, because people don't like, people really, I don't want to say they love it, but people are really addicted to that victim mindset where it's like, so-and-so did something to me and so-and-so did something to me. Okay. But we can always choose a different experience. And so I think the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we're talking about all these experiences that you've had, right? These challenging ones and the ones that, and you were talking about having all these problems. And so I posed this question, what would happen if you actually wrapped your head around the fact, or maybe I should ask you first, do you believe that every experience you're having or have had, you are 100% responsible for?
You know what? Yes, I do believe it. I don't want to. I don't want to believe it. I really don't.
Let me ask the question. Why don't you want to believe it? Why don't you want to believe that?
I mean, and great question, but because, you know, things happen, like that third thing I was saying, where things happen outside your realm, you know, that you can't control. You can't control. Sometimes you get mugged on the street. Did I manifest that? You know what I'm saying? Bad things happen. Did I manifest that? Did I really wake up and, like, you know, something gets stolen? Did I manifest that? You know,
I think yes, because we have choice in everything that we do. And this book used a really great example that you will understand. Do you remember that movie Rain Man with Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise?
Vaguely.
Okay. Vaguely. Do you remember there's this part in the movie where they're going to Vegas because the Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman, he's autistic, but he's really, really great with numbers. But anyways, the point yes. So they're at the airport. They're trying to figure out, like, which flight are they going to take to go to Vegas? And he will not get on any of these planes because he's, like, just telling all these stats of all these planes that have gotten in accidents, so on and so forth. The only airline that has never been in an accident, apparently, was Qantas Airlines, and they're not going to Vegas. So the point that the book is making is, like, you do have choice. You have choice if you fly, you have choice if you take a train, you have a choice if you get in a car. So in the example of, like, mugging, it's like, well, you had a choice. If we slow down enough and actually listened to our intuition, which is always speaking to us, you would have said, okay, should I walk home or should I take the bus or should I call a ride or should I go this different? Like, you've had those moments. You're a driver. You're out there all the time. Do you have those moments when you're like, I should go left instead of right?
I'm sure, but I think what's the confusing part about it is, like, I think what we're saying is, like, you know, the de-escalating thing, like we were talking about too. Sure, I can de-escalate this situation. I have a little bit of control over that, de-escalate the situation. I see the guy, we can talk it out. We can find some other way. I can try that. But there are situations where you wake up in the morning and your vehicle's missing. What do you do? You know what I mean? Like, that's something that just happened. You know, so that's something bad that just happened. And you can't tell me I'm sleeping at night thinking, like, you know, I'm calling this on. You know what I mean? It just happened. And you have to deal with it. So I guess what I'm saying is sometimes bad things need to happen. And there's no way you can get out of that control of controlling it. But these things need to happen for you to rebound, get stronger, get better, or find out ways to deal with it, or you know, deal with the problem.
remember what I said about manifesting, right? Before we started this conversation. And I think you nailed it with where you were going, which is you have to be careful how you ask for these things, right? Because you don't know what your soul journey is, right? There's a conscious idea, but there's like at your core, like unless you're really tuned in, you really don't know what you came here to experience, right? So there's lots of books where people will look at, and I bet that when you get to the end of your life, whenever that date is, and you look back, you'll be able to see and make sense of all the things that happened and have gratitude for them, because you will understand how they were weaving you along this path to have this experience that you wanted. So that's what I mean when I say, like, we got to be careful how we ask for these things, because you could say something like, "Ah, shit, I really want a new car." And so, right. And you go to sleep, as you said.
God, right?
and the divine goes, "Well, let's say right. car. We have a new car.
And then next week, you know what I mean?
And you're angry about it. But now you have to go get a new car because your car was stolen in the middle of the night. But you're getting the new car. It's what you asked for. So that's
right.
That's why I said to you, when I was asking, I was very clear. Bring it to me in the right way.
right. No, that and fair enough. Like, fair enough, right? You overcome these challenges, problems, and difficulties altogether to try to strive for something better, or at least come to terms and comfort with them. Not every situation is going to be maybe better. You know, we're all growing older, which means we're all rotting faster, right? So, I mean, and we got to live with that. I'm not going to get my youth back. Okay, that's cool. You know what I mean? But I could be content with where I am and what I'm doing now, or make whatever reality I'm in the best I can possibly be.
Absolutely. So, I love that. I'm glad that we agree then that we are responsible 100% for our experience. That's a tough one for people. They don't like it for all the reasons that you just said.
They can't let go.
Why? Because then it means exactly what you said. Like, well, what do you mean I have to take then responsibility for this really shitty situation that I'm in? It's so-and-so's fault. It's so-and-so's, right? Yeah, like, I get to, so as long as I get to like push the blame outside of me, then I'm not actually responsible for it. But if I have to say that, oh, I 100% am responsible for this, then you are 100% responsible for it. And you actually have to do something about it, right? If you want to change it.
Yes, right. Right. And, you know, and it's sad that, you know, there are people out there who just can't take that responsibility, you know, can't put that on themselves, can't take that blame. And, yeah, you know, it's a quote I remember hearing, one of my favorites. If there's a problem, are you man enough to deal with the help, or are you destined with the darkness of concealing it all to yourself?
I love that.
Yeah. You know, be a man, handle your problems, or just don't say nothing about them and close them in and keep them aside. But you're going to deal with them one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, externally or internally, you're going to deal with it.
Yeah. And I love that you said that, because I don't think that enough people really realize and understand that, like, I'm a real strong believer that all disease, illness, ailments are all, they begin like right here. Mental imbalance and emotional imbalance and spiritual imbalance, right? And I don't mean that to disparage anyone. I wholeheartedly believe that we all have mental health issues. It's how much are we sharing is the only question that I pose, right? And so when people keep that stuff, like, and I'm not saying that you got to like get on a stage and tell everybody all the shit that you're going through. Like, that's not what I'm saying, but I'm just saying that like these unprocessed emotions really create discord in our body. And so I've really been trying to like make a study and a science of like looking at myself, my body, what I'm feeling, and really trying to figure out like, where is there discord in my life that I can personally adjust so I can create less dis-ease and more ease within that experience. So what's one of the things that you do to like, are you in tune with your body like that?
You know, I've had since, Okay, so when I was young, I was shot like four times, right? And not only did I deal with like, and I was like, you know, I was fast. I was one of the fastest people in the school. I played football. Like I was a young, strapping, hunking athlete. You know, I was the best of what it could be. You know?
Okay.
I was sexy.
Sexy people don't say it.
Oh, listen, I'm too sexy for this. Too sexy.
Oh my gosh. People, please do not mind this man. He's known me for like 30 years, so he's clearly very comfortable.
But like what I was saying is I got shot and one day I got shot and all that came to a halt. All that, you know, that confidence, that sexiness, I couldn't even walk again, you know, and dealing with those situations or the emotions, like, okay, so what do I do? You know, and, you know, fast forward, like I never got my body to that perfection, but yeah. I'll tell you one thing I didn't do, you know, I didn't sit here and, you know, quit my job and quit my life and, you know, say, oh, I can't do this and I can't do that. I'll just be wheelchair bound forever. No. I wouldn't do that to myself. I push myself to make my body and whatever as best as I can possibly be. You know, I can run. I might look handicapped running, but I can do it. You know what I mean? So when you say I'm comfortable with my body, yes, but I still got nerve damage. You know, I still got some, you know, there's some things I'd love to fix and make better, but I'm comfortable with who I am in my body.
That's great. Honestly, that's so great. Cause that's, I won't say it's a challenge for other people. I'll say it's been a challenge for me through my own life, but that's okay. That's a different story for a different podcast. So.
Well, quickly I'll say, like, you know, some people, there's another quote, I don't think I'll get it right, but, you know, some people push the world away so far because they've been hurt so much. So they push the world away as far as they possibly can. So then they push the world away, but they know the worst pain that can have is being ignored. Mm-hmm. So then they develop a lifestyle or some type of imagery or some type of thing that says, hey, look at me, but don't get too close. Mm-hmm. Don't touch. You know? So, yeah, you know, people want to be seen and people want to be loved, but it means me, if you're not taking care of yourself, you know, I don't know where I was going with it. Maybe I was ranting, but go on.
Well, I don't actually think that you were ranting. I think that what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is like really at the end of the day. And I think I said this on an early episode is that when you strip it all away, I think we all want the same thing, which is love, acceptance and a sense of belonging and fulfillment. And so part of that though is that you still have to deal with, like, unfortunately we all have them, the childhood wounds, right? Like everybody's got them. There's nothing you can do to, like, you can't, unless you can't even say that you can't have them, because the reality is that if you grew up in like complete isolation, you wouldn't be a fully functioning human being. You need contact in order to be a fully functioning human being. And you can't be a fully functioning human being without having childhood wounds. So the point is like when people are like, yeah, I don't have any. And I used to be that person, was like, I had a great childhood. Like nothing happened. But then I realized that shit was happening in my life and I really didn't know where it was coming from. So I had to go back in time and figure out where did these stories come from that I was telling myself. And I think that ultimately on this journey, this path that we're all on, we are looking for that connection without getting hurt. Is really what it boils down to, right? Because you said, like, how do I keep everyone away but have the attention because I don't want to be alone? But that, it doesn't work. You got to lean in. You got to be willing to be hurt.
Yes. Right. Yes. You got to be vulnerable. You got to be open to it, even though it's going to hurt, you know? And it's a sad reality, you know? It's a sad, but it's so beautiful and strong again, you know? Like I got you know, it's like asking that girl you really have a crush on the first time out and she rejects you. I mean, it hurts. But the next time you do it, I mean, oh man. And then when that win comes, when you get the one you want and it works, oh man, beautiful.
Well, I think though that, so I wanted to ask you this question, because you said that, you know, you, if we accept that it's just going to hurt, then, and I think I said that as well, that like, we're going to have these experiences that they hurt. Is it that the experience actually hurts, or is there like a story that we're actually telling ourselves that hurts?
Well, you know, and here's where I like, my thinking is different from a lot of people. Like, I know I like pain. Some people like love. Some people like love and lust and everything. I kind of have an affinity. I have an affection for pain. And the way I say that, because, you know, pain is beautiful. You know, it teaches us so many things about who you are and what you're capable of, what you're ready to take, like how strong you are. And if you understand why there's pain in your life, mentally, emotionally, physically and spiritually, and you combat all those four elements of that pain in those areas, I guarantee you will have all the love and money and material and all that. So possession, all those things are just possession. Those are the afterthoughts of dealing with the pain, you know. And your body's response to pain, when you have it in your body, you know, with everything else, is telling you something. It's warning you of something. It's a great response system to everything going on. If you just open up and listen to it, most people run away as fast as they possibly can because they don't want anyone to get hurt. Ouch. And they run away and never deal with the pain. Or even some people even make it worse. they just compound it by not changing or not listening to your body's, you know, your internal clock that's telling you, stop it. This is not good for you.
Or right? They just don't want to listen to it, right? Like they sometimes might not hear it, right? No. Like the truth is like we talk about red pill, blue pill, but the reality is, and that's, you know, I'm making a connection to the Matrix, but the truth is like sometimes it's like, do you want to know, right? Because you can't, once you understand something, you can't unknow it. And there are a lot of people who are rolling around in life or rolling through life on complete autopilot. And things are literally happening on loop, right? All the bad things. And they don't stop to think, okay, it doesn't matter where I go. It doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter who I date. It doesn't matter how much money I make. None of this stuff matters. It's always the same story. And it takes a certain level of awareness to stop and go, well, maybe the problem is me. And a certain amount of courage is the truth, right? Because the whole amount of time that you've been like blaming other people for your negative experience, it takes courage to be able to stand in the mirror and accept responsibility for the life that you are creating. And man, when you start looking in that mirror at all the shadow, it's not fun. Like, let's just be honest. It is not fun.
It's not fun at all. No. But I mean, yeah, like instead of like running from your shadows and closing back that door, you know, maybe sometimes you should have tea with them. Maybe just write them out a little bit at that time. Just sip some tea and talk to them. Maybe they're not so bad. You know, maybe they're trying to tell you something.
I love that.
That's the way I look at it.
I love that you put it like sometimes that. Sit down and sip some tea.
I'm just invite them in and say, you know what? I want to beat somebody up. You know what? Come inside. You know, let's have some tea. Why do you want to beat somebody up? Tell me what is in you. And you know what? I don't know. Maybe you should just talk to your shadows and just get to know them a little bit better. They won't hurt as much.
You know, Anthony and I actually had this conversation. He's a guest as well. And we talked about this, right? Where we said, okay, like what's your, because it's kind of part of like peeling back the layers on the very things that you're running away from. And so often, tell me if you have this experience where like something will happen and you'll be upset and you'll look at it and somebody triggered you, right? They did something, they didn't even know that they triggered you and you're pissed. But then you pause to ask yourself better questions. And maybe some of those questions are like, okay, well, like, why am I really angry? Right? And then you tell yourself a story. Okay, I'm angry because this person did this thing and they were being so disrespectful to me. Okay, but were they? Like, did they actually, like, were they? And then you're like, well, no, they were just sharing and communicating information. Okay, so why did you think they were being? And when you go through this process of, like, asking these questions, you realize that, oh, it's not what this person did. It's some story I have on loop in my subconscious that continues to play where I think I'm less than what I actually am. I'm looking right now for something because I want to share this with you out of this book because I think that it'll resonate with you. But I, before I share this thing out of this book, what else are you working on now that you've released your book, Revenge is for God? What's next?
Going back to what you said, first of all, like, when someone gives you a threat, the first thing you want to do is assess who's giving you this threat or who's giving you this, you know, this, who's giving you this, whatever that they're sending you, this negative energy. You assess who they are. And, you know, once you take assess who they are, maybe you understand where they're coming from and then you can respond. But are they even capable of handling or sending out some people say something like, I'll beat you up. And, you know, you got this 300-pound guy telling you, you're going to beat you up. I mean, you couldn't even catch me if I ran. They fall down. You know what I mean? Like, so it's just kind of like just taking that step back and just thinking about it. You know, there's so many ways of handling problems, you know, and not everything has to have a fist response, even though, yes, put it in your arsenal at all times. But with that being said, and great that's the lead up question to what you just asked me. Yes, I'm working on a series right now called Cardiac Arrest. It's a comic book series. I created and wrote it myself. It's an interesting story about a group of freedom fighters from 100 years in the future who come in back into the past to kidnap, who come 400 years in the past to kidnap a young geisha to bring her to the future to help them assassinate 7 elites that took in control of societal institutions, which include money, government, religion, media, medicine, war, and technology. And
oh, she, wow.
Yes.
The big ones.
the big topics, which I like, once again, that pain that we were talking about, the things that everyone shy away from, like this, what humanity needs to do is come together and start, you know, start fighting the oppressors and all that type of stuff. That's what this comic book is the themes of this comic book touch on. So it's a great story. I'm going to be starting my Kickstarter soon. I'll be on Kickstarter. Look for that. You can help fund it so we can make it a graphic novel and do beautiful things with this story. It's a very culturally diverse story and brings elements that, you know, we don't really want to see, but it's there. But, you know, respectively, 100 years into the future. So that's what I'm working on. You can follow me on Team Cardiac Arrest, Facebook, follow my Facebook. I'm sure all the links will be in the video.
When's it going to be done?
Well, right now it is currently in production. That's a good question. We are trying to raise funds to get the graphic novel done. So we're working on that, and that's all part of the Kickstarter. So once that happens and goes through, we just take it step by step. So it's hard for me to give you an exact answer of when the whole complete project is going to be done, but like right now, you know, we're just working away here trying to get everything that the first issue is finished and it's ready to purchase. So it will first be viewed on the Kickstarter and then, you know, brought into the community. So look for that.
Okay, well, thank you so much. We will look for that. I couldn't find what I was looking for, so I'll have to like post it. I mean, I can find it, but it's like in a different book, a different Buddhist book. But here it was this idea that there's 10 places, I'll say, that we dwell in the conscious mind. There are hell, hunger, animality, anger, humanity, heaven, learning, revitalization, Bodhisattva, and Buddhahood. And most of us dwell in those lower 6, being hell, hunger, animality, anger, humanity, and heaven. And so it's a really interesting exercise. I'm not going to dive too much into this, but the whole point of me bringing that up is, you know, as we continue to talk about, you know, the human experience and interacting with people, because me on my own personal journey here, I would love to think, and listen, as I was reading this, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm totally at like the learning and realization and Zen zone place. Like that's me 100%. That's what I was saying. Until
this. That's some ego there. That's a lot of ego.
And I admit it, like we have an ego, and ego is healthy. You need to have an ego. You got to know when to like put it in check. But what was really interesting is as they described this, they were talking about how on an average day, and I realized, you know, because they were talking about somebody who like wakes up in the morning and they're like calm, and then they go do something and they're instantly angry, and then something else happens and they're in like animality mode. And I just had this day literally 3 days ago where I woke up and I was all zen, and like something happened and it sent me into a tailspin. Yes. And by the end of the day, I'm like, I did it again. Right?
Life.
Exactly. We're always going to have problems. They're always going to be there. So how do I just navigate them? And I'm probably one of the least reactive people I know. But how do I navigate these challenges that come up without like weaving and bobbing and going through these crazy emotions over things that like really are not occurring? So that's the journey I'm on right now. For those of you who are not paying attention, I'm reading the book called The Buddha in Your Mirror. Yes, I'm all over the place with the faith and spirituality because I'm on a journey of discovery. That's what I'm doing. So with that in mind, that's why I'm turning to you, Les. Do you want to share a little bit about your journey with faith and or spirituality?
You know, the thing with spirituality is it's personal. Mm-hmm. It can be shared, but it is personal. I like to think it's God's mission for what you have to, you know, accomplish or learn, right? And a lot of people don't get that spirituality. They just think it's just, you know, peace and be left alone. No. Once again, that's opening up that closet and bringing some of those demons are here to help you. Mm-hmm. You know, and we really need to tap into that. So that spirituality, I think, is personal, but I also think it's your mission of what you need to do. And I believe myself, I had missions to accomplish in that spiritual journey. So it to me, it doesn't look like all like, you know, peace be with you and flowers and you know, like everyone.
Are you mocking me? Are you mocking me?
I don't know if you haven't seen this movie. It's one of the greatest movies, the greatest comedy movies. It's called Airplane, made in like the 70s. It's so old. There's this pilot who walks through the airport, and every Buddhist and monk and priest, and hey, you want a flower? Hey, donate to our. And he turns it into an actress, and he's just starting. Punching out the booths and drop kicking the priest and everything, like, get out of here. everyone, you know, and I'm not mocking everyone because everyone's on their own personal journey, just like you said. But, you know, everyone's coming around giving me flowers and peace be with you and love the world and just, you know, stop back and oppression will just, it'll just go away and everyone just hold hands and kumbaya. Like, no, that's not the way I feel that we're going to get that Zen that we're looking for. And sometimes it involves going into the trenches. Sometimes it involves banding together. Sometimes it involves knowing how to put up those boundaries and saying, no, this is not going to happen anymore. And we're going to stand strong and we're going to make sure that this doesn't happen anymore. Sometimes
those don't need to be synonymous. You can have a boundary without it being a violent one. You can stand up for yourself without violence, right? Like, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, trust me, I always get triggered when people are like, kumbaya, because I'm always like, love and light.
I see you at the airport.
I don't expect it in my experience. Like, I don't roll through life. So when I experience it, like, I'm actually legitimately hurt because I don't roll through life expecting people to hurt me. I actually expect in life that I'm going to go out and meet people and see the light in them, and that you're not going to. So obviously I've had experience where that hasn't happened. But I think the beauty in that is that how do I get myself back to that? Elle says to me, would say to me all the time, you and your rosy colored glasses. And I would say, I'm going to keep wearing these rosy colored glasses because somebody has to. If everybody started taking off the rosy colored glasses and thinking the world was shit and hell in a handbasket, well, I think it would look a lot worse than it does today. So I'm going to continue with my flowers and my rainbows and my love and light. Thank you very much.
I, you know what? And maybe I should take it, drop it a notch. You know what? We need your love and light. We need that smile. We need that. We need people. We need people shining in who they are. We need it all. I guess my problem is that we need it all, and we need it all to work together to figure out what we want. We need to start asking ourselves those tough questions. What do we want as a collective and as humanity? What do we want? You know, and you know, we need to bring all these elements together to ask those questions and figure out what it is that we're searching for.
And you know, the truth is you're right. We do need it all because you can't know. And as I say to people, like as much as I try to vibe as high as possible, you can't know a high vibe without experiencing a low vibe. Like it's not possible to know one without the other. So you must have both. That's what the balance is. So I think the question is how do we bring it back more into a harmonious balance? That's, I think what we're feeling is that it's grossly imbalanced at this point in time.
Beautifully said. Yeah, I agree with you. How do we bring it back into a harmonious balance between everybody, all nations, cultures, races, men and women? I feel like everyone's at a discord right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, I'm a human being. I want exactly what you want. You know, I'm a human male. I want to love. I want to live free. I want to help my people. I want to raise my family. That's really all that we want. Mm-hmm. Why is that hard to achieve in 2024? You know, like why is that still hard to achieve? Why I can't get water. I can't get, you know what I'm saying? Like why is that hard to achieve? This should be easier as we grow as a culture, as a people. It should be easier, not harder.
Well, I think the answer, I don't want to oversimplify it, but I think that it is out of all of the same things that we'd already said, right? Like, I don't think that anybody goes through life. Like, if you think about when people are born, nobody's born bad. Babies just want to survive, right? So they cry, they whatever. And those programs or those ideas that are ingrained in us from young is where it really begins, right? The scarcity mindset, the lack, the not having enough, like not being enough, the value. Some of it is generational trauma. So the first thing is that you need to be able to look in the mirror and say, like, you know, we always want to blame it on these big institutions, but at the end of the day, the big institutions are run by man. They are run by human beings, and human beings who clearly, obviously have their own unhealed pain, wounds, all of these things that all the money and power in the world is not going to change. So at the end of the day, it starts with addressing those things. I personally think it is shifting, and maybe it's just because I feel like my circle is shifting, because when you know, I think I'm just vibing in a different way. So I just think there's more of an awareness. And I think that people are really genuinely trying to show up differently, be differently. And I think it always, so my thought on how we change it is you just worry about you. And you do. Mm. And I don't mean it in a selfish way. I mean that when you shift, the people around you will shift. They won't be able to help it. They'll either shift as in leave your experience, or they'll shift because you're vibing different. And so I've witnessed it. When I shift, the people around me shift. So if we focus on ourselves, that's how we help.
Is that beautifully said. And that just showed me, and you're right, like that. Like, so I created this art company that I was going to say. So, I mean, I just want to get this out. One of the things I want to say is that as how you can help you bring that collective together is music, art, be who you are, find out who you are and show that world. So I created this company called Save Yourself Studios, you know, and Save Yourself is one word. And because I believe that the philosophy we need going forward is helping save yourself. And I'm SAVIORSELF as one word.
Okay.
You know, so savior.
I was trying to like put it together.
Yeah. That's a pun. It's a play on words, yeah. You know, but you need people need to save yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going around trying to do this and trying to do that, but you're hurting, you're healing. You can't do nothing from you. And you're coming from a place of pain and anguish and hurt. Save yourself, man. And then, you know, reach out and then try to save everybody else.
And that's actually what this book talks about is, and that's why it's important that people don't take that out of context, right? The save yourself is not a selfish, egoic base, like I'm gonna get mine. It's I'm gonna work on healing me first. And then when I start healing myself, I'll be in a lighter space that will just permeate. Like it'll just, people will feel that energy and they'll want to know, like, why are you so happy? Like they will ask, like, what's going on with you? Like you feel different. Like things are different. And then I think that the other part of that is like what we're doing right here. Share your story, because you don't know who's going to hear your story and have some hope instilled or some faith. I mean, let's face it, Les, you've been through some serious shit in your life. And you have a really good life, not an okay life. You have a really good life.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
You know what? Thank you. Actually, genuinely, thank you. And with that being said, it's like, I feel like it's my mission, right? I'm here. Like I made it through some of the roughest, toughest things that you could ever imagine. And I'm not saying that to, you know, try to make myself look any way, but I've made it here. I'm here. I'm alive. I'm well. And if I don't help now that I saved myself going through what I went through, if I don't help other people, like I just wasted all this energy, all this good energy, you know. So I'm writing books, you know, and I'm trying to share that. So people have a template of help, of community.
Well, that's actually how you help. And somebody, another guest had like actually put it really, so there's always this question that I ask, which is like, well, I always ask one juicy tidbit that you want to leave with people. But something that she'd said was about, you know, just always showing up as your authentic self, because you don't know who's supposed to actually receive that. And if you're so scared and like worried and like hiding parts of yourself, then you're actually not fulfilling your mission. So you were actually supposed to go through all that you were supposed to go through for the reason that you said, which is like, if I can help the youth out there understand, like there's different ways to deal with these challenges, so on and so forth, like that was part of your contract or your goal in this lifetime. So show up as yourself so that you don't hold yourself back. Part of your job is to be authentic. So in wrapping this up, what is one juicy thing that you would like to share with the listeners today?
Juicy.
Yeah, like a something like a mantra, like your go-to piece of advice at this stage of your life.
You know, we hit some really good topics today, and I've said a lot of deep things about things, but one thing I would say, my mantra about this life today is don't give up, follow your dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, and it doesn't have to be in a situation where it has to be like, it just like a lot of, like we talked about the manifestation, you know, like I want this, I want that, like follow your dreams. What are you going to do to get it? Mm-hmm. What are you going to sacrifice to make that happen? Follow, like, and pursue that. You know, don't just stop, pursue it. And I would love to say this for everybody out there. It's going to be tough. Following your genes is going to be rough. There's going to be people that are going to stop you at every angle. They're going to try to get you emotionally, mentally, physically, financially, everything. You're going to go through it.
Love and light.
Yeah. They're going to put you down any way they possibly can. And trust me, as a survivor of all of it, do it anyway. Everyone's going to have their opinion. Do it anyway. Don't let anybody stop you, you know? Make your dreams come true.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for having me on. Yes, it's my pleasure. I've known you for like seriously 30 years. Hey.
Oh, so this is your dream.
Oh my gosh, stop it.
Here we are. We're over.
This guy, you know, his ego, like, you are really.
I'm so happy. I am so honored. We are.
Oh my gosh! You're right. This is so my dream. But in seriousness, thank you so much for joining, for sharing. I loved having you. I think I would love to have you back again. I think you've got great energy, and I love talking to you. You've always had some very. Actually, I thought this would be a little more combative than it actually was, but maybe you and I actually have a lot more in common than I originally thought.
You're kumbaya and I'm rap, 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 rap. But hey, it works.
Anyways, thank you.
Thank you. Right on.
Thank you so much for joining us today as I sat down and talked to Les about his experience throughout life to this point, his experiences raising a son. And of course, as always, we dabbled a little off course and got into some other interesting topics. If you enjoyed the content that you heard today, then please feel free to subscribe to this podcast on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And until next time, take care.